The Bob Siegel Show is made possible in part by ProBuild, Primetime Advertising Corporation, Web Studio, W&S Electric Incorporated, and the law offices of Matthew Simone. The views and opinions are solely those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent KPRZ or its sponsors. It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
Welcome. This is Bob Siegel, one of those rare, unusual, and troublesome creatures known as a born-again Christian. Actually, I'm not really that much trouble. You might even find me to be a nice guy. But there's another nice guy on the show today, my very special guest, Phil Paulson. Now, Phil Paulson is an outspoken atheist. I want you to know that I do not hold that against him, since I am certainly known as an outspoken Christian apologist. I'll be introducing Phil in just a few minutes. Phil and I met before, and I like him. I like him for two reasons. First, he's likable. Second, since I used to be an atheist myself, I can relate to a lot of the things he says. By the way, I was an agnostic for a few years, too, before I became a Christian, so you agnostics out there don't want to leave you out. I relate to you as well. Now, in any discussion about God, it's important that we first define some terms. And I need to clear up three commonly misunderstood words. First, the word faith. Second, the word evidence. And third, the word proof. So let's start with faith. This is what most people think Christians are saying when they use the word faith. This is what most people think Christians are thinking when they talk about faith in God. I have no idea at all whether God exists. I have no idea whether or not Jesus Christ is the Son of God or God incarnate, but hey, I know. I'll just pretend that he does exist. And if I die and find out that by chance I was correct and there is a heaven, God will reward me for having been so gullible and stupid. Folks, that is not the way the authors of the Bible defined the word faith. The writers of the New Testament, in talking about faith, said to the people, "Knowing for a fact that God exists, do you have faith enough to trust him to work in your life?" They told people that they could know God exists because God's Spirit would come and live within them. They told people they could know God exists because he had raised Jesus Christ from the dead. Faith was not defined 2,000 years ago in ancient Greek the way Webster's dictionary defines it today. And we never want to make the mistake of using a modern-day dictionary to define a word that's 2,000 years old. Faith meant trusting God to work in your life, and it assumed that this person would meet God first, actually meet him. For example, if I gave my friend and co-host Sharon a $1,000 check and asked her to take it to my bank, it would take a great deal of faith on my part to believe she was going to head to my bank instead of heading to her
bank.
That's
not true, Bob.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to use you for an illustration, Sharon. I trust you with all of my heart. I really do. Sharon is sitting here, and I do see her. I'm communicating with her. I know that Sharon exists. I might have to choose to trust her to go to the bank, but I'm not going to doubt that she exists. I'm not going to doubt that we had the conversation. It's the same with God. One can have facts so overwhelming that they know God exists, but they have to trust God to do the things in their life that he claimed he was going to do. Now we'll move on to the word evidence. Evidence is that which points to a high probability that a given claim is true. Often people say to Christians, "Show me proof that God exists," and they show evidence. It may even be good evidence. It may even be great and fantastic evidence, but the skeptic can still tell them, "Well, you didn't actually prove it." So what is the definition of proof? Proof is something that establishes an absolute fact. I do not believe we can know anything for an absolute fact apart from personal experience. If you were doing jury duty on a murder case, it is very unlikely that you would ever have genuine proof concerning the guilt or innocence of the accused. All you would have to go by is the evidence offered by those who claim to be eyewitnesses, or perhaps the logic presented by an attorney as motive and probability are explored. Finally, based on everything you could see, hear, and think about the case, you would reach a decision. Your choice might very well stand upon good evidence and sound logic. There may even be a 99% probability that your decision is the right one. But let's face it, there will always be room for doubt. Why? Because you weren't there. You did not see the crime committed. Maybe there's a unique and mysterious side of the story that nobody has ever heard of. Perhaps it's a clever frame-up. Who knows? Who really has full assurance? Only a genuine eyewitness. His or her senses would draw the final conclusion. A scientist will tell you that nothing is proven unless it's repeatable. An honest historian would have to admit that without the use of a time machine, historical facts are really historical records pointing to a likely possibility. We have every reason in the world to believe that Julius Caesar ruled Rome. But is such documentation proof? After all, we weren't there. We are trusting the manuscripts, mere testimonies of human historians, at least until Doc Brown and Marty McFly turn a DeLorean into a flying time machine. Faith, evidence, proof. Those are the definitions. And now, let me formally introduce a woman who defies definition because there aren't enough adjectives in the world to describe her, Sharon Cushard.
Thank you, Bob. I am so excited for our show today. Phil is founder of the Humanist Association of San Diego, and he's also probably more well-known in this community for being the plaintiff on the Mount Soledad Cross case. And so, without anything else, we can bring him on.
Okay, and Phil is here by phone. Are you there, Phil?
Yes.
Phil, it's nice to hear your voice again. How have you been?
Oh, very good.
What has it been? It's been 11 years, 12 years, something like that? It was back in the early 90s that we debated.
What was it, 1992?
I think you're right. I'm going by vague recollection. I remember it was a lot of fun, though.
It was, and you had your own congregation right there at the University of California, San Diego's campus.
I did, and I remember many atheists from the Humanist Club, so in a way you kind of had a congregation there too, but that made it a lot more fun. Phil, why don't you tell our listening audience, just to get started here, what caused you to become an atheist? As I recall, there was a time you were not an atheist, and what was it that convinced you God was not real?
Well, first off, let me just say this. Let me get my position out there right
away. Okay, sure.
If God existed, we would call it science. In truth and in fact, God is make-believe. God does not exist. There is no God out there to pray to except one's imagination. Frankly, I'm a skeptic. Now, in answer to your question.
Yes, go ahead.
I was raised a Lutheran. My mother was the youngest in the family of preacher's kids. So my first two initials in my name are PK, because she wanted me to be just like you, a preacher's kid.
Of course, I wasn't a preacher's kid. I grew up as a Jewish atheist, but go ahead and continue.
Yeah, that's the second commandment, honor thy father and thy mother. That's another issue. But anyway.
Well, not when they're telling you to go against God, but that's another issue.
Okay,
go ahead.
All right. At any rate...
Well, you know what, Phil? We're going to need to hold you on over the break so that we can take a commercial. Hold with us. We do want to give you a chance to say everything that you have to say. And we will be right back.
Okay.
KPRZ, San Diego. And worldwide at KPRZ.com.
Admit it, to be successful these days, you need a website. And if you don't have one, you'll be like my friend Arnold, who finally switched from a manual to an electric typewriter when everyone else already had a personal computer. And the day I tried to talk him into a website, just listen in.
Forget it, too expensive.
Then how are you going to market your company? People need information.
There's still a device called a telephone.
telephone. You're talking like Fred Flintstone. How are they going to see your logo, your graphics and pictures, your store?
There's a lovely brochure that we send out.
Have you any idea how much money you spend every year to print these brochures?
Yeah, right. How about the cost of having a website hosted? Not to mention the time, the complicated software, the hiring of a designer.
All of those difficulties are removed when you use Web Studio.
That name sounds familiar.
Web Studio is a website design software. It enables you to create your own pages in minutes without hiring a designer. All you do is use your mouse to drag and drop images and text. Then it saves the pages for you on the internet. The program includes 14 design galleries that contain graphics, sounds, and anything else you need.
I didn't know it could be so easy and quick. Maybe it is time for me to step into the 20th century.
Arnold, it's the 21st century. For information on Web Studio, go to webstudio.com.
We're back. This is Bob Siegel, and I'm talking with my friend Phil Paulson. Okay, Phil, thank you for your patience. I know that going over the break in the middle of a thought is not fun, but go ahead and finish what you were trying to say.
Well, basically what I was trying to say is that the faith-based thinking, or otherwise known as a belief based on superstition, leaves me with a lot of skeptical thoughts. My real concern here, Bob, is what is your basis of authority in your faith-based claims?
Well, did you hear the...
Yes,
definitions.
I got it down.
Okay,
you do know
that I'm not talking about blind faith. The basis of my authority would be twofold, that one can have a relationship with the Spirit of God, and that the resurrection of Jesus Christ is an historical fact as much as we can have historical facts according to the way I defined evidence.
Okay, so what is your basis of authority?
The basis of authority is that if Jesus resurrected and only God has the power of life
after
death...
No, you're just making hearsay. Where is your basis of authority, Bob?
No, well, let me finish, Phil. The basis of authority is the resurrection of Christ because...
Where do you get that?
I get that by the fact that historians in Jesus' day, even historians who were not Christians, recorded the resurrection of Christ as a fact.
Where did they record it?
What's that?
Where did they record it?
Well, Josephus recorded it in Antiquities 18. We know for a fact Josephus was a Jewish historian writing to the Romans. He was not a Christian. Tacitus, the Roman historian who did not think highly of Christianity, at least mentioned that Jesus was executed under Pontius Pilate, and that something pretty incredible, that there were rumors of something miraculous after that time. The Jewish Talmud is a fantastic source because the Jewish Talmud was very anti-Christian, and they called Jesus a sorcerer, but that's pretty significant.
That's really blasphemy.
Well, it would be, because in those days, if you did not like somebody, but you couldn't deny the fact that he did miracles, you called him a sorcerer. But what we have then, Phil, is a fantastic anti-Christian source with a bias predisposed against Jesus that nevertheless affirms that a man named Jesus existed and did miracles. Now, even you would admit that that's pretty good historical evidence, and this is something outside of the New Testament. So to answer your question, there's a good deal of historical authority for the resurrection of Jesus.
Okay. So, in other words, you're saying that based on other books outside of the Bible, there was evidence that there was a guy named Jesus that ran around...
And did miracles, and his resurrection from the dead was recorded by the historian...
He was kind of hanging around Palestine at the time, right?
Yes, the land was called Israel at the time, but yes.
But it's now Palestine, right?
Yes, because the Romans renamed it Palestine after they conquered.
So Jesus really didn't hang around Israel too much. He hung around the Palestinian Authority area.
No. Jesus, the only people that were living there were Jews and some Romans and some Greeks. The Arabs didn't go into that land until the time of the Crusades.
Oh, so there were some Greeks there too.
Oh, sure, there were some Greeks. Okay. Jesus spoke to Greeks and Romans.
That's where the Armenian Christians came.
Okay, well, Phil, what do you want to talk about? Because you asked me if there was an authority, and I did give you some historians. I'd like you, if you could, to respond to, were you aware that the historians Josephus and Tacitus and the Jewish Talmud talked about Jesus? Were you aware that historians outside of the New Testament talked about
him? I don't know what the point is. What is your point?
The point is you asked me what my authority was for believing in Jesus, and my point is if the resurrection of Christ is a fact of history, then obviously what Jesus taught must be true, because God isn't going to resurrect some blasphemous false prophet from the dead.
You're using this word God. you're using this word God, and you just dropped him right into the discussion. We were talking about Jesus, and now you're talking about God.
Well, Jesus claimed to be God.
No, well, that's anybody can claim that.
That's right. Anybody could claim that, and the other people that claimed it are still in the grave, and Jesus isn't. Oh, therein lies my point.
Wait, no, where's your evidence on that?
My evidence on that is that the historians of Jesus' day and the historians that lived shortly afterward recorded it. Let me ask you this, Phil. If historians such as Tacitus and Suetonius and governors such as Pontius Pilate and people such as the Jews and skeptics in the Talmud merely reported that a man named Jesus gave a speech or started a revolution, would you have any reason to doubt it?
You know, I don't see that that's an issue here. I don't see whether Jesus was alive or dead makes any difference.
Well, my point is...
What is your point?
Your point is that
you're making a leap of faith that you're making Jesus into a god, and therefore you don't have to take responsibility for what Jesus said on the Sermon on the Mount.
No, let me make my point again.
When you create a deity, then you say the person's perfect, now you don't have to do anything.
Okay, well, Phil, you're asking a very good question. Why don't you give me a chance to actually answer it and listen to the answer, and then I do want to hear what you have to say in response. You asked me what the authority was, and I mentioned that if the same historical testimonies that recorded that Jesus rose from the dead and did miracles claimed that he started a revolution, we would have no reason to doubt it. So I submit to you that the bias of not believing in a miracle is entering into your thinking, and you're not willing to be open to the fact that maybe the historians really said this.
I never said that. You're saying that.
Well, are you open to the possibility that there may be things in science God can do that you and I just can't understand yet? Is that possible?
Bob, you don't have to put words in my mouth. I did not say that. I said that it didn't matter to me whether Jesus existed or not. But you're saying it matters.
No,
let me point out to you, if Jesus was such a deity, as you're claiming, well, Jesus believed that the earth was flat when he went up to the pinnacle and saw the four corners of the earth. Jesus believed that the earth was flat when he went up to the pinnacle and saw the four corners of the earth. When Jesus was carried to the top of the highest mountain and shown all the kingdoms of the world, how is it America was not included? And this is supposed to be a Christian nation, right?
Well,
it
didn't list any of the countries. If it was all the kingdoms of the world, then wouldn't that include America too?
He was so unscientific in his thinking that it couldn't be a god. He could not be a god, because had he been a god, at least he would get one thing straight, and that this earth wasn't flat. But
well, he wasn't claiming that the world was flat, Phil. There were figures of speech in those days. For instance, I'm sure...
Okay, so we can interpret it. That's
well,
fine.
Let me finish. That's Have you fine. Ever heard somebody say, I'm so hungry I could eat a horse? Have you ever heard that phrase?
What's the point?
My point is, when somebody told you that they had to go to lunch because they were so hungry they could eat a horse, you didn't really expect them to go eat a horse, did you? Well, they had cultural expressions in those days, too. It's actually considered a myth that many people once thought that the world was flat. There were not too many people that actually thought that. But phrases such as four corners of the world are phrases that people use because the Jews spoke in very poetic and very exaggerated terms. Now, I have a question for you, Phil. Is it possible that God exists?
No.
It's not even possible?
No.
Okay, explain to our listening audience, if you will, please prove to us or even give evidence that it's not possible that God exists.
Okay, let me do it in the context of a basis of authority that you will appreciate, using the Bible. I want to prove that God does not exist, okay?
Well, Phil, when we say God, if you're calling yourself an atheist, that means you don't believe that any God exists. So it's not
that's
just
right.
about the Bible. You're,
no, that's right. And let's be very, very clear on
so
that.
Prove to us that it's impossible that some kind of thinking, feeling, sentient entity exists that created this universe.
First off,
you
I'm
know
an
for
equal.
A fact that that's not possible.
Okay, Bob, let me just respond to that.
Go ahead.
Please. First off, we have to get our terms down right. You seem to have a prejudice for monotheism. You like Islam, you like Christianity, and like Judaism, but you discard polytheism, and you discard pantheism, and you discard the agnostic concept of God, and you discard the atheist concept.
Well, my point,
of God.
Phil, is that as an atheist, you would discard all of them.
Can I finish, please?
Sure.
So obviously, you are very prejudiced, and you believe in the monotheistic concept of God. I think that's fair enough, isn't it?
Well, no, there's nothing wrong with the belief in multiple gods as a possibility. It's just that that's not the way it happens to be. As it happens, there just happens to be one God. If there happened to be 20, I'd believe in 20. It's just that there happens to be one.
wait a second. Now.
There also Why happens to be a happen? Break that we have
wait
to take.
Second.
Please hold
Why
that thought,
that?
Phil.
How do you know that? You don't know if it could be one God or many gods. So let's be very clear that either it's God in...
Okay. Continue with that thought, Phil, after the break. 1-800-556-1210 if you have a question for our guest, Phil Paulson.
APRZ, 1210 AM, San Diego's Family Station.
Admit it, to be successful these days, you need a website. And if you don't have one, you'll be like my friend Arnold, who finally switched from a manual to an electric typewriter.
This is Bob Siegel. With the wiring in your home, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. For all you know, he may have gotten his license by sending in 3 serial box tops.
Hey, these things happen. There's nothing wrong with my wiring. Houses burned down. You wanted a guarantee? You should have ordered the deluxe package.
Folks, play it smart. Call WNS Electric Incorporated. They specialize in contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, WNS takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I use them myself, and I wouldn't call anyone else. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for WNS Electric. License number 480539. WNS. And we're back. This is Bob Siegel with Phil Paulson. We left in suspense. I sure felt the suspense because Phil was asked how he knew for a fact that there was no God. And thanks again for your patience. Phil, go ahead. Mm-hmm. We know there's no God. Why?
Well, only God knows. You heard that statement. So God is the sum of all things that we do not know. The problem I'm having with that type of contest, it's a contest of does God exist or does God not exist? The burden of proof is not on me. I'm not the one making the claim.
Well, then let me ask you a question, and it's the same question I asked you. I know you're not saying that he exists or doesn't exist, but I asked you if it was possible. Now, if the burden of proof isn't on you and you don't know, why not call yourself an agnostic who will say God may not exist?
Well, I'm
As an atheist, you've obviously decided that he doesn't exist, and it works both ways. What is your affirmative reason for not believing that God exists?
Well, if God existed, it would be necessary to abolish him. Man created God in his own image.
And you know that how exactly?
Well, first off, my point of view is that it just deprives superstition of its standing ground.
But that's based on the assumption that it's superstition.
But it compels you as a theist to reason for its existence.
How do you know that, Phil? Isn't it possible that there's a thinking, feeling, sentient being who's communicated with people and made his imprint upon history? It would be difficult not to at least consider that possibility,
Bob,
wouldn't it?
Bob, I think it's religious superstition.
I know you
based
do.
Based on primarily and mainly upon fear.
And how do you know that? But are you willing to admit that it might be that way in your opinion? You don't know that for a fact,
no,
do you, Phil?
I think you're conveniently confused. I do not feel obliged to believe that the same God who has endowed us with sense, reason, and intellect, has intended us to forego of that use. I think we should be able to readily know about God's existence. One way would be through communication, right? How do you communicate with God?
I communicate with God through prayer.
Okay, why just prayer? Is that the only way God communicates with you?
God can communicate any way he wants.
Oh, but why is it just prayer?
Well, it's not just prayer. The Bible's filled with a plethora of different ways God communicated. Dreams, visions. At times he communicated to Moses with an audible voice. Sometimes he sent angels.
Well,
so
yeah.
You're the one who's saying it's only by prayer.
Well, Gabriel, the archangel, should get on the internet then and send out some spammed email to everybody.
Well, wouldn't you agree, though, Phil, that if God wants to communicate, he would do it in his way?
Why isn't God spamming us on email? I mean, the internet is a great place to get his message out. Why isn't God there?
Well, we don't know that God is not on the internet, Phil. You haven't proven to us that he doesn't exist yet. So for all you know, he's on the internet. For all you know, he's with you right now.
Well,
Phil,
if God wants...
Go ahead.
If God wants us, he could do it through the internet. If he wants to communicate with us, he could write something on the internet. You would think he could do at least that.
And by that same token, we would think that he could do it any other way he would choose to do it, correct?
Oh, can I respond to something that you said earlier in your first introduction? You came across with the traditional Pascal's wager. I love that one.
No, I didn't even mention. Pascal's wager says that we have everything to lose if this is not true. I didn't mention Pascal's wager. I mentioned faith,
Pascal's
evidence,
wager.
And proof.
No, you did not use Pascal's wager. You didn't say Pascal's wager, but you said something to the effect, I wrote it down here.
Pascal's wager was saying to people, look, if I'm right and you're wrong, you might end up in hell. I never once said that, Phil, so
okay.
I am familiar with Pascal's wager, and I didn't mention it.
I think the important point here, and my point, is that if there's no God, then you spend your time, labor, and money in this life in a futile effort to prove superstitious fairy tales.
Well, then, Phil,
your entire life on superstitious fairy tales, Bob?
Well, first of all, Phil, you're assuming they're superstitious fairy tales. And once again, I will ask you, you know that they're fairy tales. How exactly? And please respond to some of the historians I quoted from the ancient world. Historians who didn't believe in fairy tales, incidentally.
Oh, no. Hey, look, you know, I think there's strong arguments to be made that there was a person that walked on the earth that was called Jesus, but there's strong arguments to say it was all mythology.
And what are those strong arguments that it was all mythology?
Yeah, there's strong arguments to be made that there's books written on the mythology of Jesus.
Uh-huh. And what are the facts that those books are presenting?
That
I mean, it's easy to quote a book. What is the actual fact that tells us Jesus was a myth?
You know, what I find very unusual is that, when we read the Bible, the Bible is based on the word of the so-called Almighty, but yet we have so many different translations and differences of that Bible. And the same way with history. History is written by the victor, and there are historical revisionists. You know what a historical revisionist is.
Oh, yes, and I don't care much for them because it's very dangerous to revise history. That's why people teach that the Holocaust never happened. They revise history.
And that's absolutely appalling.
But let me respond to this idea that history is written by the victors. Mm-hmm. At the time of Rome, we had many different histories. We had the Jews who lived under the Romans, their version of the Romans. We had Roman cynics and satirists who did not like what Rome was doing, such men such as Seneca. They wrote about the Romans. We had the Roman history themselves. We have the Greeks who lived under the Romans. And so with all these different cultures merging together, Phil, I'm sure you would agree, we have a pretty comprehensive history of Rome. It's simply not true that the only history we have of Rome was written by Rome. As for the Bible, in the Old Testament, Israel is painted by the Israelites in the most negative light possible.
Okay.
They're constantly talking about them disobeying God. Wouldn't that show something
there
about the integrity of the authors?
God. You're trying to connect Jesus to God, and that's just not so.
Well, Jesus claimed to be God, and then
that doesn't
he resurrected from the dead.
God.
He
I
did
can claim to be God. You can claim to be God. What does that mean? That doesn't mean anything.
That's right. It doesn't mean anything unless the person rises from the dead. That's why the resurrection is so pivotal to Christianity.
Well, there's no evidence of that.
The evidence for the resurrection is the writings of Josephus.
Let me quote from the Bible, because I want to point out the Bible as a basis of authority here, if you wish, because you are a Christian, you do believe in the Bible, right?
Yes,
Bible
I do, but I also believe, Phil, that when there's a question you don't want to answer, you're changing
the
subject.
God is dead, Bob. The Bible proves that God is dead. God said, and this is, turn to Revelation 21:6, and it says, "And he said to me, it is done. I am the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end." So God specifically stated that he has an end. Any theologian, like yourself, could strongly argue that God already died after 7 days. There was no need to stick around after creating such a chaotic mess.
Phil, are you aware of the fact that there was such a thing in those days called ancient oriental idioms? Because that's what you just quoted. When God says, I'm the beginning and the end, you're reading theology into a very poetic part of the Bible. Revelation was written as apocalyptic Hebrew literature, and it was very poetic in nature.
Why are there so many translations and interpretations of the Bible?
I'm glad you asked that, because
so
I wanted to respond.
Denominations of Christianity.
Good question. Let me respond and hear me out, and then you can respond. It works good that way. There are different translations because there are synonyms in our language. One translator writes the word big. The other translator writes the word large. But the truth is, Phil, the Greek and Hebrew manuscripts that the New Testament and Old Testament were translated out of still exist today. If anybody has any question about the validity of our English translation, they can go to another one. I have a Greek interlinear Bible sitting in front of me right now. I can look at the Greek anytime I want to.
Well, this is the point that I'm making. It's just like the issue of the Ten Commandments.
Wait. I'd like you to first please respond.
There's a Catholic Ten Commandments and there's a Christian Ten Commandments.
Okay, we'll talk about the commandments in a moment. Could you first respond to what I said, Phil, about the fact that we have the Greek and Hebrew manuscripts still here and therefore the translations are not really a problem?
Oh, I'm not arguing that.
Well, you were arguing that. You were saying that the different translations were a problem. So I'm pointing out that it's not
I'm
a problem.
Saying, I'm skeptical. That's all I said. I think it's
important. Was your skepticism put at ease when I told you that you could go to museums and read the Greek and Hebrew for itself? Did that put your skepticism at ease a little bit?
I don't. You know, to me, it's not an important issue. I'm not. I don't.
Well, then why did you raise it? Did you raise that issue if it wasn't an important issue to you?
No, it's not an important issue. The important issue here is you're stating that Jesus is a deity, and I say no. Jesus, if there was such a person, and there's strong arguments to be made, and strong
there certainly
claims
are,
to
thank
be
you.
Made, and strong evidence to be made that it was all mythology.
There's no evidence.
Equally enough on your side that says that Jesus did exist.
There is
no
evidence at all that it was mythology.
Yeah, it was mythology. And,
and you know that how exactly, once again. Tell me how you know it was mythology. Okay, don't even tell me how you know. Show me what the possible hypothetical evidence that it was mythology is. Anything.
I think that there's books written on the myth of Jesus Christ.
Right, but that doesn't answer the question, Phil.
What points did
they make in those books?
That's how I'm answering your question.
Okay.
I'm not the one who wrote the book.
Okay.
I'm just saying there is strong evidence on the other side that says that the whole existence of Jesus was make-believe, put together as fiction, and it was based on mythology.
Okay, we got another break coming up. Fact or fiction? We will be right back. 1-800-556-1210.
Win great prizes on the KPRZ Z Club.
New prize opportunities every week.
Go to KPRZ.com to find out more.
The KPRZ Z Club.
How many times have you heard the phrase, they're all the same, applied to local contractors? It is unfortunate that a few can tarnish the reputations of many, but it sure is nice when you find a contractor with godly principles. But what if they only do floors or only the painting? What if you want to build a whole new home? Or you want someone to fully complete your remodel or tenant improvements? You need ProBuilt. Serving San Diego since 1987, residential and commercial, quality work, completed on time. Local Christian businessman and president of ProBuilt, Jim Bell, said, "When people pay you to do a job, they simply want you to do the job. They expect quality work, and they expect it to be done on time. We do that at ProBuilt." For references and dozens of pictures of both residential and commercial work, visit our website, ProBuiltInc.com. That's ProBuiltInc.com. Or call our El Cajon office at 619-593-2965. We're fully bonded and insured. California State License Number 567925. ProBuilt.
We're back. This is Bob Siegel, and I'm here with Phil Paulson. And, Phil, we were in the middle of me asking you what the points were that these books made about mythology, and if I'm hearing you correctly, you're aware that some books have said that Jesus was mythology. My question is, if you're going to believe what one book says about Jesus, then why not, by that same token, believe what another book says about Jesus, more specifically, the 27 books of the New Testament?
Hi, Bob. Again, you're putting words in my mouth. There are strong arguments for the claim.
But what are the arguments? That's my question.
Wait a second. No, hold on. Let me finish, please. There are strong arguments for the claim that he once lived. But frankly, I'm skeptical of such claims. And there are strong arguments for the claim that it was mythology. And I'm skeptical of those, too. So
But Phil, It takes a number of years for mythology to develop.
I'm just saying, I don't know whether Jesus lived or not. It's not important to me. It's really not important to me. But what is important to me? You know what's really important to me? Relationships. Meaning of this life. Our relationship.
Well, Phil,
friendship,
it's got...
that we can develop.
Okay.
This kind of thing is meaningful.
Let me
this
respond
earthly
to that.
Existence is meaningful. We're on this planet, and we're not going to get out of this life alive. We're all going to die. We're all going to go out feet first. We're all going to be on the other side of the grass.
Let me respond to that, Phil. If we exist by randomness and chance and accident, then how can there ever be any meaning and purpose to life?
Oh, it is, and I'm glad you brought that up. Let me tell you a little story, and this, if I can briefly go into...
It'll have to be brief so we can keep this a dialogue.
Okay. There's a lady that's dying of breast cancer, and she has been very close to me, and I've been talking to her a lot. And we've been talking about the meaning to life. And I feel that evolution is a theory that's not that is more than just a fact. It is really the way things are. And I sense that with my friend who is dying of cancer, she wants to believe in the by and by in the sky when she dies. It's like having this the biblical concept of immortality in heaven. You know what I'm saying?
Well, sure, and, because believing she evolved randomly from a single-celled amoeba, I imagine, doesn't give her a whole lot of hope and meaning.
Well, you know, there's more than that. You know, we did come from living organisms of vertebrates and invertebrates from the magnificent Cambrian age to the present.
Well, you're aware that Charles Darwin himself and even scientists like Albert Einstein believed in God.
By the way, did you know? I really thank you for calling me today because it was Charles Darwin's birthday yesterday.
Well, I want to pay him homage because he did believe in God, and he never wrote Origins of Species to disprove the existence of God.
And that is true. And
Albert Einstein's pretty high up there as a scientist. He said that anybody that studies this universe must believe that a manifest spirit is at work, a spirit to whom we, with our knowledge, should all be humble.
That's right.
Well, are you in good company with Albert Einstein believing in God?
Yeah, he did believe in God.
Yeah, he did.
And
now, he didn't believe in the biblical God, but he believed in some kind of thinking, feeling, sentient entity. Hey, Phil, are you willing to take some phone calls? We have some people that would like to talk to you.
Yeah, he said yes.
Yes? Oh, okay. And, Ross, you're on the Bob Siegel Show with Phil Paulson.
Hi, Bob. Hi, Phil. Thanks for coming on the show with us, Phil.
Thank you.
I have a somewhat similar path, that Bob... got into in the sense that I began as an atheist and became a Christian later on. But what I was curious about was what kind of supernatural, well, for lack of a better term, supernatural, obviously it's an interpretation according to you, experiences did you have as a Lutheran? In other words, when you were brought up as a Lutheran, was it purely an intellectual bringing up, or were there some subjective experiences that seemed to supersede all that? And if there were such things, how did you dismiss them later on as not being of a God?
Okay, that's a good question, and I think I would really like to address it this way. There is such a thing as the phenomena of, and I think it's an illusory phenomena, of receiving the Holy Spirit, the feeling of the Holy Spirit. But I have something better than that. Then getting off into the transcendence of going into a blank state of mind and having a sense of bliss, I like the aha experience. I like to solve a scientific problem. I like to be a problem solver. It's like in the beginning of the day, I put out a do list. Some people pray. I make out do lists in the morning. And when I check them off, it's an aha experience. I did it. It's an affirmation of myself, and I feel good about it. My self-esteem increases, and I feel better. I have to tell you, there's no way you can ever become happy as a Christian until you reject theology, the fears, the ignorance, and, of course, the bigotry that goes along with hanging on to Christian
thought. Okay, Phil, let me interject just so we can make this a dialogue. And great question, Ross. Thank you for calling in. Phil, I'm going to give you some science to respond to. This is somewhat like an equation. Now, this is what I would call evidence for the existence of God. You tell me where I'm going wrong. Something had to always exist. We can't get something out of nothing. Neither can we get the personal from the impersonal. We can't get sentience from non-sentience. We can't get thought from non-thought. Rocks and chemicals by themselves do not think. Therefore, this something that always existed must have been a personality of some kind of thinking, feeling, sentient entity. Now, I gave it to you almost like an algebraic equation. Tell me where that comes up short, please, Phil.
Yes, because there's such a thing as randomness. There's chance.
There's How did personality develop by chance? Even Darwin wouldn't have gone there.
Okay, it doesn't matter whether he'd gone there or anybody gone there. Just you want to hear me out?
Yes, sure.
Okay. Random chance, necessity, and biochemical reactions in a soup of a welcoming planetary space. Now, this has gone
about... Welcoming planetary space?
And you know who the... and then the evolutionary judge will allow dissimilar parents to link up. We are going to find more marvelous things happening in the future after we die through the marvels of evolution.
Well, Phil, you didn't answer the question with all due respect. How did we go from the impersonal to the personal? Telling me that we had a couple billion years of evolution doesn't do it.
First off, you have to, it's up to you to who makes the claim that we come from the impersonal to the personal.
Well,
you're making that claim.
Well, there's evidence for that claim. You and I are having a discussion right now.
I know.
We're thinking, feeling, entities.
I don't have to. I'm just skeptical of your claim.
Yes, and you're skeptical. Why? For what reasons? For what facts?
Okay. First off, I don't know if it's true. You're just saying that we went from the impersonal to the personal. I don't know if that's true.
Well, would you, let's just take it a piece at a time. Would you agree that something had to always exist?
Can I argue that it would be more the opposite? I live here in San Diego, as you do. And, you know, San Diego is growing in population every day. I came from the country where everybody knew everybody, including the names of their dogs and their cats. That was personal.
Okay,
but
Phil.
But when as the population explodes, and if when there's no need for population control, such as abortion rights for women, such as birth control, then we're going to become more impersonal. So based on that scientific fact, your logic and reason is faulty. It's fatally flawed.
Phil, you're a nice guy, and I like you, but with all due respect, you did not answer the question. Is it... When I said to you that something had to always exist, would you agree with at least that part of the equation?
I am saying that everything has changed since life first began on Earth. I answered it the first time.
But
it's based on evolutionary cycles.
But, Phil, there are many theistic evolutionists, and they are theistic evolutionists because they can't explain, apart from God, how we went from the impersonal to the personal.
Okay, that does it. Look, Bob, first off, science is godless. So you cannot bring theology and mix it with science.
Well, if God happens to exist, God would be a very real thing. Therefore, God would not be scienceless.
Okay, Bob, I appreciate you saying that. And it's back to my central theme. If God existed, we would call it science.
Okay, well, we're also going to call this a break. Hold with me, buddy, Phil. And we'll take a few more calls and be back for our last segment. See you in a bit.
KPRZ, San Diego, and worldwide at KPRZ.com.
Looking to build your own website without a lot of cost and trouble? Hi, I'm Bob Siegel, here to tell you about Web Studio. Web Studio allows people to create their own websites simply and easily without knowing HTML. With Web Studio, you avoid the learning curve of front page and the expense of a web designer. Web Studio has 14 different galleries that contain graphics, sounds, and everything else you need. For more information about Web Studio, go to webstudio.com.
We now return to the Bob Siegel Show.
And we're back. This is Bob Siegel. Phil, we're into our last segment of the program. It goes by pretty quick, so I want to, we're going to continue talking, but since we get out of here pretty fast at the end, I want to thank you ahead of time for having taken your time to come on as a guest. I appreciate it, and I really do enjoy talking with you.
Thank you.
And I hope that we can do another one of those debates out at a university soon. That would be fun, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We have another caller, and we have Mark in San Diego. You're on the Bob Siegel Show.
Hi, gentlemen. Good Sunday to you.
Thank you. Good Sunday to you as well.
This call is mainly for Bob. Bob, my question to you is why... We know people like Phil. His mind is blinded, and I don't mean any offense by that, but we know his mind is blinded to the truth at this present time. Why would we sit and hold a conversation for an hour? You can talk to you blue in the face. If the Lord hasn't given him understanding and wisdom to his existence, he's never going to see it.
Well, I appreciate the question, Mark. There are different ministries of the Holy Spirit. For example, Stephen argued with the Jewish Sanhedrin, and we were told he was filled with the Spirit and wisdom, and they weren't really listening to him either. We're told that Jesus argued with the Pharisees. Paul argued with the Jews day and night throughout the Scriptures. An argument can be done civilly. Phil and I are talking to each other with respect. We're both very passionate about what we believe, but we're doing it with respect. Thank you for calling in. And Judah, you're on the Bob Siegel Show with Phil Paulson.
Yeah, I've got a question for both of you, actually.
Go ahead.
And, who do you think is more persecuted and faces more discrimination in America today, the atheist or the fundamentalist/evangelical?
Go ahead, Phil.
Well, it's pretty obvious to me that we live in a nation that is closed off to atheists. Atheists do not have rights. Christians do. Christians have control of this country. 90% of all prisoners or more are Christian. The problem we're facing in America is that I believe in an America where the separation of church and state is absolute, where no Catholic prelate would tell the president should he be a Catholic, how to act, or no Protestant minister would tell his parishioners for whom to vote, or where no church or church school is granted any public funds or political preference, but not here in America, and where no man is denied public office merely because his religion differs from the majority opinion.
Okay, Phil, let me respond to that.
That's the problem I have.
Let me respond to that. I'm a Christian, and you're on my program, and you're being allowed to share your views. Exactly how are you being discriminated against? Exactly where are your atheist views not being allowed to be shared?
Oh, for example, in God We Trust. In God We Trust.
No, I asked Phil how you're personally, where have your civil liberties as an atheist been violated?
Why do I have to pick up a currency that says in God We Trust? Why do I have to be forced into saying...
You don't. You can use a credit card or write a check.
Look, that's really cute. I'm a first-class citizen. I'm sorry. You can make me a second-class citizen if you choose.
Phil, can you tell me where the Constitution uses the word separation between church and state?
I can tell you what exactly the Constitution says.
Yes, and that those words are not in the Constitution.
Article 6 of the U.S. Constitution says there can be no religious test ever.
No, it says Congress shall make no law concerning the establishment.
Hold it now. That's important. You read that one, Article 6. No religious test. In other words, what they're doing right now, let's take, for example, in Colorado. There's a guy who's on a county board or commission or something like that. He would not say the Pledge of Allegiance, and you know what happened to him? He's being recalled right now. And so no Christian can tell me that if they bring prayers into the schools that children will be able to refuse to say no.
Well,
the
if they really
step
live in a democratic...
really push their bigoted agenda.
If we really live in a democratic society, Phil, and some of the people that are part of that democracy are Christians, don't they get to vote their conscience too?
I put it the other way. Suppose we were all atheists and we didn't give you the right. I believe in the separation
that is the risk of a democratic... Yes, but the words separation between church and state are not found in the Constitution.
Jesus said it. Jesus said it, render unto Caesar which is of Caesar's, and render unto God which is of God.
That's because they were asking him to portray a violent revolution against the Romans, and Jesus was not willing to start a violent revolution when he was able to have a peaceful revolution, very effective peaceful revolution, I should add.
You can interpret the Bible any way you want. He said very clearly, separate church and state. He said it right there.
The words separate church and state were never found in Jesus' mouth, Phil. Neither did you quote him. You just talked about Caesar. And I told you that they were asking him to have a revolution against Caesar. Phil, thank you so much for being on the program.
On.
We've got to run.
Bye.
And we'll see you next week, folks.